Hello and welcome to Scoppy Radio. My name is Daniel Johansson.
And I'm Maureen Smith.
And we are joined by Anna Rose E.E. Epstein and Kevin, I just forgot your last name.
Kevin Sparrow.
Cool, dope. yeah.
It's a good
nice
name.
Work, family. No. well, thank you guys so much for coming, you all. Right at the top.
That's okay.
Right at the top. Now, we were talking about it, and I'm really glad that we have you back on, and I'm also weirdly glad that I already fucked it up, because I think it's really important conversation to be having. It's something we've, in our conversations about intersectionality and all different kinds of things that we've been talking to different people about, sometimes it'll come back up like, oh, yeah, and language and...
Pronouns. And identity.
Yeah, and the difficulty in dissecting the way that we speak casually is both something that needs to be done and also both something very difficult. And I think it interestingly brings up the distinction between someone that's trying and someone that is just inherently like a dick about it. And so it's like,
or just completely clueless.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. And so what I love about this conversation and constantly bringing up this conversation, and it's also the reason why I'm glad that I keep fucking it up, because I'm glad I get to keep bringing up the conversation, because the only way that you can like actually see change in the way we talk and the way that we use pronouns, the way that we use certain words, is just constantly bringing it up and kind of like spreading the ideas and spreading and educating, I think, which is really interesting. I think
fucking up in front of people that don't know about it and then correcting yourself is a good thing.
Yeah, it's way better than like policing, you know, at least from
but better would be to just be better at it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, eventually we'll all be better at it if we keep practicing.
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah,
so anyway, this is also a fantastic transition into
why you all are here.
Yeah,
why are we here?
We're talking about our season.
So, nothing without a company season.
Right.
So you all had your season announcement party last night.
Yeah.
And it seemed like a blast.
It was a blast.
I wasn't there.
Kevin wasn't there, but
I felt the blast from across the city.
Yeah.
It had a wide radius.
But Kevin was missed very much so, because there were speakers at the event and I spoke multiple times, but I completely forgot to talk about our theme, which was identity, and I'm sure if Kevin was there, that would not have happened. Mm-hmm. Kevin would have been all up on that, well, the theme is this.
Yeah. He's come up and said, identity.
By the way.
No, and I think you absolutely need both sides of that token. Like, you need the person that's like, let's get this, this, and this, the things that need to have happened said, and then also, let's have a good time, you know?
Yeah.
So, would you all mind talking a little bit about identity as a concept and kind of how it's helped to structure your season?
You want me to go ahead and
take
that one?
Yeah, that's all you, Kev.
That's great. Well, we came out of a season of change, which was this past season where we had transformation and the kid thing, which, that was a change.
Yeah.
So our two shows in this current season that's just wrapping up this summer were about how do you deal with some type of change in your life. Transformation was about a collaborative effort to kind of come into alignment with your identity, whether that's a transgender or gender non-conforming identity. The kid thing was about changing into this kind of adult role of what are things you know about yourself and how does adding a kid to the mix, how could that change things? So once you have a change that upsets your life in some way or changes the trajectory you have, then you have to come into an alignment with your identity. So identity seemed like the next logical step, I guess, for us, which is why we chose that and then helped pick the shows that we're doing this season based off of that, of figuring out how can we examine people, characters that are trying to figure out something about their identities, trying to really lock that in, because I feel like that's a really important thing that theater can do, that we can see these mirrors of ourselves in that. So that's kind of why identity seemed like the next step for us.
Yeah.
I think that's such an important point, and it has to do with doing what you know and kind of performing through your experiences. So there are a lot of artists who choose to like extend themselves and perform outside of what they know, and it can be exciting and interesting, but also I think that there are times where it can end up being a little like problematic. Mm-hmm. Like,
well, especially when you start getting into the whole thought of representation and dealing with, it's an interesting balance that I think a lot of arts orgs are dealing with right now, where it's you want to kind of expand the stories and perspectives that you're telling, right? But you also don't want to cast a bunch of white straight cis people as minority groups, and so it's like it's been an interesting, and so it's always, and it comes back to the idea of like, who does the onus of education fall on? And I don't like the idea of the onus of education falling on minority groups, if that makes sense. So my point being here is that like, it should not fall on the already extremely socially, maybe is abused the right word, or like socially downtrodden like trans kid to educate cis people on just how they want to be spoken to, you know. But I really commend where you all are coming from, in that you have that representation built into your administration. And I think that's kind of where a lot of arts orgs are starting to really, or at least
trying to catch up on. Yeah, because we've always cast really diversely and with lots of women, and had a trans-identified person in our company before I even knew that we had.
Yeah.
You were with us for like a year before I even knew that you...
That I was... Identified. Well, that all came out of the process, too, of doing transformation and doing that work of finding where... I mean, mm-hmm. that's still an ongoing thing of finding your gender identity, but it was a rewarding process. So I think it's just one of those logical things of when your art... You can't separate your life from art that you're making in theater, and you can't separate that from the conversation about what are these representations. So I think making shows that when you talk about identity, you have to be careful in that sense that you are inclusive about whose identities, whose stories are being told, and that they're being told by the people whose stories they are.
Absolutely. Right. No, and that's what I think, you know, you all are doing such an awesome job with that. And so just...
Mm-hmm. Well, yay! We tell queer stories, and we've got lots of queer people in our company. We're also doing the third show, the last show of the season that we're doing, is a pigeon play, and it's a cast of like 10 or something, and they're all Pacific Islanders or from the island of Hawaii.
You might need to explain pigeon.
Pigeon English is a mixture of lots of different languages that... The Hawaiian culture kind of like took a whole bunch of different languages and compiled it into semi Ebonic or like Shakespeare almost, because it's a whole bunch of different languages, but you can kind of know what is being said by inflection and tone.
Mm-hmm.
Hannah, who's my co-artistic director and wife, is the writer, and it was produced in Hawaii in 2016 and won a whole bunch of awards.
Cool.
So we're excited to bring it to Chicago, and it'll be right on the lakefront too. Mm-hmm. So people will get to look out at the lake and pretend like they're in Hawaii.
Mm-hmm. You can get an example image from the season announcement party last night. I saw that. I was like, this looks great.
Yeah.
This will be great for this.
No, I love that. And I think that actually really speaks to identity really well too, because I think a weirdly underserved perspective is that Pacific Islander area. We have a couple close
minority
friends
within the minority.
Exactly. Yeah. We have a couple close friends that are Filipino, and that's something we were talking, like Joaquin, we've been talking about. Generally, I really love finding these works that exist, because I think so many, I don't know why I'm like railing against mainstream arts organizations today, but I guess I always am. So like, it's
not that. Fuck the man. Okay.
But,
burn it down.
Yeah. but it's,
DIY all the way.
I know, right? Exactly.
We had this conversation yesterday with, Rebellious, a magazine for women, about, like at end times, you know, it's not going to be the New York Times that is reporting on it. It's going to be like the little grassroots organizations. And I think it's the same thing. It's not going to be, you know, Steppenwolf performing the story of the end times. It's yeah. gonna be like nothing without a company, and like the little Aww. The little guys who are used to scrapping. And
well, even if it's like, even if we're starting to recognize what is progressing the culture, right, if we're recognizing the things that we need to do that make the world more inclusive and more, we are hearing from all of these different perspectives and identities, we're not sure that it's the mainstream that's going to do it. And I had one thought that hope maybe I'll come back to, but now that you brought that up, the conversation we had yesterday, I actually want to ask you all this. We've been talking a lot about the idea of establishment ideas versus, I'm trying to think of a better, indie, you know, kind of outside of the norm.
Or DIY. Which is what you said, yeah.
And
do it yourself.
Right. For you, is there a, like, a desire to reform the existing structures or to burn it down and make something new entirely?
That's a really hard question.
Yeah. I don't have... I'm going to preface by saying I don't have an answer to this. Most people we talk to don't have a, like, this is... I'm going to lead the revolution and do this, and this is how... Like, I think it's very much this nebulous kind of thing that I think we're all just kind of starting to think about.
Yeah, sorry. I mean, I think it's a hard question because of our current administration and, like, where we're at right now with not really knowing where we're at right now. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And also, me personally, I don't want to run for any offices or anything like that. And I think that's a really big problem. I think that people that are artists that understand the human heart and mind want to make art. They don't want to go into politics. And I think that's a big problem.
Yeah.
I think that if there are any artists out there that do think that they could go into politics and not, not have their heart turned black, mm-hmm. I think that I say, go ahead and I will support you all the way. I think that there needs to be more of that in the world. And there's not. And I don't believe in war, and I don't believe in, like, dragging someone out of a home to lynch them, and, you know, like, I can't see us being able to throw down our government in a way that's gonna be, like, a example for the next days to come that would be productive, so... I don't think that we should throw down our administration in that way.
Yeah.
But we need to just... I believe we should get into the administration and work mm-hmm. it from the inside.
Yeah, well, because there's comfortability and there's familiarity and there are systems in place that, you know, in theory work. And so I think that...
If we use those theories, if we... Yeah. Like, if we would have... If the Congress wouldn't have even let Cheeto into, you know, there was a reason why, yeah, we can go into conspiracy theories in a whole nother podcast. Let's talk about some theater.
Cat-spiracies.
The cat yeah. does not like this conversation.
The cat's yeah. like, talk about the season.
Yes.
Speaking of which, let's talk about your season.
Yes.
Yeah, I think... For us, we have three plays coming up in our upcoming season. It's season 12.
Yeah.
Which is really exciting.
I keep forgetting that, so I just keep saying 17/18/18.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But it also helps record how many years you've been in the game. Yeah.
Right.
So we're doing three shows, which are Bobby Pin Girls.
Go ahead.
Oh. I'm naming them, and then, yeah. then other things can happen. Bobby Pin Girls, Cornerstone, and That One Batu, as we already mentioned.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I was just excited. Janie Bell, who wrote Bobby Pin Girls, is a company ensemble member, and this is her first play being produced. So is there a word for that? Like, world premiere?
It's a world premiere.
It's a world premiere, and it's a... And it's
like a debut.
Debut, yeah. The playwright's debut, which is exciting.
I'm gonna nip something in the bud.
You want me to?
No, I think she's good now. Sorry, okay. We're talking about our cat. So the reason there's been a lot of like weird noises is, and I'm
oh,
really
no, she's good.
Yeah, she's good. No, she's I'm really excited for this books. For Moody because like Oscar's very much the explorer. Like Oscar's the one that's gonna get up on top. He's usually on top of the. He's been on the top of the bookcases a while. And Moody's the one that's like, I'm just going to find something comfy on the floor, and I'm going to sit in it, and that's going to be what I do.
So she feels confident right now.
Exactly. Yeah,
that's awesome.
She's telling her truth.
Right. And so, like, I really love the idea of her just kind of like...
Anyway, yeah.
So she's coming into her identity.
Absolutely.
Yep. But so she... Right. So for those missing the visual bit, she is currently on one of our raised windowsills. So she's probably like 5 feet up off the ground,
and
which
she's
is...
sleeping on some books.
Yeah.
About to sleep.
Yeah.
Distracted by a pigeon or something.
Anyway, so...
Yes. And then, directed... Bobby Pin Girls is directed by, Ben Kay, who is an awesome director around town, originally from England. It's funny, he was doing his speech last night, and I guess he was getting more nervous, because whenever he gets nervous, the British accent will come out even more. And people afterwards was like, did he turn Australian or something? I was like, no, he's always been British. Just got thicker. Yeah. He's great. Janie is great. That's going to be going on November. And December at Burger Park in the same mansion as our last show, The Kid Thing, but it'll be in a completely different space that you did not see at The Kid Thing, and we'll have the audience enter a completely different way, so it'll feel as if the audience has never been there before, even though we did our last show there. Site-specific immersive theater.
Yeah!
Right. And I wanted to, I don't remember if we talked about this with you all the last time that we had you on. But, so, are you all working with that, partnership, thing that the city does with those park spaces? Is that...
No. I've had my eye on that space for, like, 5 years, and I became friends with the person who runs the property.
Cool.
The park district.
Yeah.
And I was like, hey, I really want us to get into this mansion when it's open, because they have two mansions and a coach house, and one of the mansions wasn't open for a few years. And so I happened to call within the first 2 weeks that they are opened it again. And JD was like, I've been meaning to call you. We opened the space. And I said, let's do the paperwork right now.
That's awesome.
So like 6 months of paperwork, and we're an arts partner at the space.
Oh, that's awesome.
Cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, because the city does do something like that with parks, and or at least had an initiative to try and do that. And I feel like they were just like hoping and praying for someone like you, like to
well,
to
we've been around.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
we've
been here. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I just kind of meet people and make friends. Like our party last night was at the Waterfront Cafe, which is on the Chicago Park District's property, right at Burger Park, and Frank, who runs that restaurant, which everyone should go to. It's opening on Friday for lunch, and then running for the summer. Frank came to the kid thing, and because I had been like smooching with him, because he was like cleaning up his property, getting ready to open, and he came to the kid thing, which was awesome. And I mentioned, like, we want to do a season announcement party. Would y'all be down for like hosting us? And he was so nice and let us use the space, and the space is beautiful. So, I mean, ambiance, like, was there. So, for the party last night, I really didn't have to do much other than, like, get people there and have, like, a buffet of food and have a keg.
Yeah.
And everyone had a great time.
I used to live right around the corner from that spot. I lived on Kenmore in Granville, and it's right on the lake.
Yeah.
It's, like, right on the water. There's the rocks right there that you can, like, stand on even if you want to. And then you get the view of the skyline.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
It's amazing. And the weather for it must have been really nice last night. Yeah.
It was perfect. Yeah. I'm from Texas, so I think other people would maybe were a little hot, but I was like, this is cool to me.
I'm from Wisconsin, so I'm, like, languishing currently. Just like, no.
Just keep not wearing as much clothing as possible and try to be fine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Carry around ice with you.
The thing that's hard for this, and if there are classical singers listening right now, maybe it's when you have to work gigs and you have to wear pants. It's like, come on. Like, can we just not? And I think that's, I think because classical singers are so much more steeped in the
fancy
elitist tradition, is I guess Yeah, like the, like, oh, you need to wear tuxes all the time.
Do opera singers do the, because you'll see actors come into an audition with, like, a their bag ladies and men and theys. And,
bag they?
Bag theys. Still working on my pronouns, too. But they'll come in with a bag, and they'll be in street clothes, and then they'll change their clothes and get all pretty and then change back. See, do the opera people do that?
The power move is to traipse through the city and the subway in your audition uniform, which for ladies, the audition uniform is a jersey dress in a jewel tone that is at least 3/4 and covers your knees.
Wow. Mm-hmm. It's like choir outfits.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It doesn't sound fun.
There's actually this movement in the classical, female identifying classical music community of wanting to get that knee stigma gotten rid of.
Because
right now there's this like idea that, you know, to be demure, your knees need to be covered in an audition. So there's this thing called Free the Knee, where it's like, we can wear a shorter dress to an audition and it won't make us less professional. Because that's the idea is that, you know, oh, if we can see your knees, it's not very professional.
And also how regressed, like, the opera community is, that that's where we're at.
I know, it's like, free fighting for knees.
And
it's
one
like
day we'll get shoulders.
Exactly.
Kev actually couldn't come last night because they do burlesque, so they were taking their clothes off last night.
I wasn't taking my clothes off.
Oh, you were?
You're misconstruing things altogether. I was doing a live literature piece for a show called All the Feels, and so I was really just reading and speaking text. Yeah. My clothes stayed on. I was originally thinking about being partially naked, but... Yes, it does get into that issue for me of I do take my clothes off sometimes in front of mass audiences. So that type of professionalism is always a wavering thing, you know, like, of course, being a professional in the burlesque world requires a lot less clothing at the end of it.
Yeah.
But it does require costume. It does require these things. And so you have to put your... whatever your personal style is on that. And then I'm thinking about going to work later today and what clothing I'm going to wear for that, which is different from this because I made a nice summer outfit. If people on our live stream want to see, I know those over the podcast won't get to. I'm just wearing shorts.
Well.
Yellow shorts. I like the color. Yeah.
Do you share these to the Nothing Without a Company page?
Yeah, we'll share it.
Then, if you are listening, I highly recommend heading over to the Nothing Without a Company Facebook page, and you can get a nice visual representation
of Kevin's shorts.
Yeah. And while you're there, I also recommend throwing them a like. Yeah. Anyway.
Likes.
And throw yourselves a like.
Yeah.
We like you.
Thanks, guys. Yeah.
We like everyone.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I like everyone.
Yeah. So, what is the second play of the season about?
Our second play is called Cornerstone and is actually being written by the fabulous Kevin Sparrow.
No way!
Directed by the fabulous Jake Front. And it's a devised piece, which is really exciting because that means it's not written yet. Because it's being devised with actors will have auditions soon, I promise.
So the process for this devised theater escapade, I would say, it's still ongoing. And we did a workshop back in January. It was a 2-day kind of experience of getting actors in the room, starting to craft what this world is. But basically, as our press release loosely states, it's about a personal success seminar that people come and are invited to, and it gets gradually more out of hand and more insidious about what is happening within the realm of that. If anyone has taken or knows about personal success seminars.
I just think of Little Miss Sunshine.
Yes.
Is that's the same basic concept? Yeah.
Yeah, it can be something like that. I've been doing a lot of research on cult entertainment. It gets really interesting to me to look at all the parallels that we have between these kind of different ways of being in the world. So that was another thing that goes back to the theme of identity, of where do you go to find identity, who can kind of serve that to you in a capitalist system, it becomes really an interesting and fraught thing. So I'm going to be really excited to work with actors and people with diverse experiences, because I think that's going to feed a lot of what that material is and what a lot of the issues that come up when you try to have kind of this mass identity.
Yeah. I want to actually talk a little bit more about the concept of a devised work, because I've found that we've talked with a few now since, because did we originally mention that, sorry, I'm going to wait for the truck.
DIY.
It's been truck-a-palooza recently.
Yeah. We have the window open because...
No, it's closed.
Is it?
It's just a loud truck.
I'm impressed. Anyway.
It was hanging out there waiting. It was like, I'm going to interrupt them.
Right.
It was like, now. Devised work? Let's go.
Well, yeah, it was with you all that we brought up devised, right, the first time?
I think so, yeah.
Maybe. Because
we usually do new work and devise stuff, and the kid thing was the first published play that we've done.
That's right.
Yeah.
So, we've talked with a few composers and new music people recently, and I keep wanting to use the word devised, but I realize it's not a word in the classical tradition, and I want to, like, help foster that being a thing that people consider as a way of. So if you guys don't mind, are you?
I'm doing good.
50. I keep a tally generally, and not just when I'm on the podcast, but just in general. And I bat 500, which I'm okay with. I think
it's better than
what it was before.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Anyway, so if you all wouldn't mind, kind of explaining what devised means in detail, even yeah.
Okay.
Because it's part of it is that it is that working process with artists directly.
Mm-hmm. I think what I think of devised can mean different things to different people. So the way I've worked with it is working with groups of actors and coming into the script format through making whatever material we have lived out. Recording that and making scene or compositions for the stage out of that, because I feel like you can make different things. You could be making like a traditional script, or you could be making like we did with Transformation, which was more of mixed modes of performance. So it kind of depends on what you want your end goal to be, and there has to be a plan coming in the room, which is why the director is oh so important in setting the tone. So, right, I would say, yes, as a writer, I'm in the room, but I'm also more of a recorder. I'm not crafting it in the traditional sense of what I would when I'm sitting down doing a play that's kind of based on scene-by-scene work. And you do bring actors into that process, but you have them reading very specific text versus taking some concept, idea, applying other sources to that. So whether that's taking from things people have written, doing writing exercises with actors and having that go up on its feet as a lived, experience or just an acted out experience, that can really change the tone of the piece as you go along. So that's the exciting thing about it, is to not quite know tonally what's going to happen until you've gotten to like the set down script phase.
Yeah, another way that we used to devise within our company is so we'd have a writer or two writers talk about like the beginning, middle, and end of what they want, and then they break it down into scenes and they say, okay, in this scene this news happen. So we find out this, and this is the important thing that has to happen in this scene.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll get actors, and then the actors will improv the scenes and make sure to do that news. And then the writer will then record or listen and take from the improv what works and then devise the script from that.
Cool.
And there's like multiple improv.
Yeah, what I like about it, thinking about it from with composers that we've talked to about it, is you can't really, it sounds like you can't really have like a devised adaptation. It doesn't, or can you? Sorry.
Yeah, I think people have devised adaptations.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Before. Well, and I guess I more mean is, and I might just be wrong here.
That's okay.
But,
we're all wrong sometimes.
Yeah, right.
And then right other times.
Yeah. We all bet 500, don't we? Yeah.
With opera and with, there's a lot of setting of pre-existing texts. And so in a lot of ways, that can really be a, you take the text and you set it, and then it's, that's the way that it's going to, like, it's a one step. It's a, okay, here's the text, and here's it set, and then it's ready to be performed. And then from that end, once the text is already set to music, mm-hmm. going and maybe fine-tuning when you're working with the performers, but it's, and this is my understanding, is that it's, it would involve the performers being involved pre the music being written, to me, if that makes sense.
But I see why it would be hard to adapt a musical or opera, because with a text, usually things that are adapted are texts that of people that are no longer living. Or like their text is public domain. So really, like, an artist can just take that work and then use it as a reference and then do whatever the hell they want with it.
Right.
Whereas if you're putting on an opera, it's hard unless you have people that want to rewrite the music, which I don't know as many talented people that can do that.
Yeah.
and then you are like billing it as an adaptation of this piece. I think it would just be so much more work to adapt.
Yeah.
Well, music.
And speaking to the idea of, like, you know, can there be a devised adaptation? In a way, the idea of a devised work is an adaptation. It's just an adaptation of, in your case, speech. You're taking speech and you're taking other people's experiences and you're adapting it into a script. So in that sense, it is like the ultimate adaptation, which is interesting. I was like sitting there and it was bubbling in my brain and I was like, that's a...
We'll have to get a Jake friend in here for the next podcast to talk about Cornerstone, because Jake has devised a few different pieces and goes about it in a really interesting way. So when Cornerstone is closer, we'll get...
Yeah, I can say a little bit more from the writing part if that helps think about devised work, but right now I'm working with kind of design and architectural concepts. So I have this book called The Little Pocketbook of Design Terms, and so that's, I guess, going back to the adaptation front of it, that's a published book, and I'm taking material from it and stripping it of its original context and applying to that, like, how would you sell someone this as a concept that they could apply to their own life and doing something to change their circumstances with that.
Oh, Cornerstone.
Yes.
Oh, no, like the architectural.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, cool.
So in that sense,
cool.
Like, it's...
No, that wasn't me just now remembering the name of the play. That was me being like, oh, no, that's clever. Like a Cornerstone.
I should have thought of that. No, I kind of forgot that it was even a pun,
just
I
been
guess.
Saying it so
yeah,
much.
Yeah, it just is the... It's what it is. I don't know, but that in it's not something where we'd be like, and this is based off of this random book, but in terms of adaptation, yeah, you could say that works to a certain degree, because you need some material, and if you're like me, who likes to work from written text, then you are adapting, you're taking a lot from a page-bound thing and making it into something performable. Versus something that could be more open-ended process. I know there's some vacuuming happening.
Yeah, let's.
Do you want to pause for a sec?
Yeah, let's pause.
Cool. Sorry about that. We have lawnmowers outside, and
it's a leaf blower.
Leaf blower.
Oh. It's a leaf blower. I checked.
Right.
Where do they even blow the leaves? Like,
that's the thing. Is I went out. I didn't go outside. I looked out the window. But I looked out the window and my heart dropped because I thought, oh no. There are so many leaves in the grass.
It's gonna take forever.
But then I realized, oh no, he's not blowing them out of the grass. He's blowing them off the sidewalk into the grass.
Mm.
So he's blowing them into the grass is the answer to that.
We keep our sidewalks nice and pretty.
And our grass, terrible.
Yes.
We have to keep those lines clear.
Yes.
A strict separation of sidewalk to leaf place.
I feel like those things are just meant to, like, blow your problems into other people's yard, and that's just a metaphor for, like, everything going on right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or maybe you were just looking for a metaphor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's speaking of metaphors.
Yeah, right. I both want to finish where your head was at, but I also that transitions really well into my next question, but please go first.
Great. So, coming from that background as a writer and as a person who works with performance as a text-based thing, I think it is important to realize what other people's strengths bring to a project. So the devising collaborative process is really rewarding in that sense of you get to generate text in the reverse way rather than just generating performance from text. But I think you can do an adaptation for things because you're taking something that was originally written or originally performed, and you're using that as the material to turn it in a different way. And so that can all come from one source, or it can come from that original source and then be blended with other things. So I think it could even happen with opera or with composers. It would just be a different challenge.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's the basis of that concert that you did with Operatic Book Club, where it was music written based on cookbooks.
Right.
Yeah, where inherently a recipe is not a dramatic text, but if you take it...
Anything could be a dramatic text.
Well, right, but in its inception, in its intent, but the idea of taking a recipe, for instance, and turning it into text for example, an art song or a one-act opera would be an example of devised work as you were talking about it.
Yes. Cool. Or if you wanted to, and I was also thinking about the adaptation part of it, if you took an existing melody, and especially because most opera, and maybe this is part of a different thing from what we're doing, because we're not doing opera at all.
Nope.
But the idea that you could take a melody, you could take this theme, whatever it is, and apply the different text over it. I just think of the opera example because a lot of it is in foreign languages. Mm-hmm. And so making new text for a melody that's recognizable could be a way to do that. And I think the same in the general devising process. You're working from the themes of something and drawing them out with new text, new performing material.
Yeah. Cool. No, reworking translations is something that we'll talk about a lot because it's all about trying to figure out a way to make it more relevant, because obviously the foreign language aspect is really difficult for people that don't know the language. But, you know, and then there's all those arguments of like, well, and obviously, like we were talking about, we can get into a whole other conversation, but, well, you know, English doesn't sing as well as Italian does, and it's like, okay, but I mean, like, people don't know Italian, so anyway, so I'm sure I'm getting backlash for that currently, but anyway.
Italian people know Italian. Yeah.
Our Italian listenership is furious.
But so, my next question for you all is, talking about, we've kind of talked about it a little bit, and I'm trying to remember if we talked about it the last time we had you all on, idea of creation during this political climate and during the world we're living in. And I think the theme of change last year, which maybe we touched on, is really rife with that, especially at the time, like, 2016 was just a chaotic time, but I think the idea of identity now in the world that we're living in and the climate socially that we're living in, it's gotta be hard to deny the relevancy, and so I'm curious, kind of your all's perspective on that, and how. Has there been a struggle against it? Has it been an embracement?
So it's hard when you're trying to put together a season so far in advance that you have time to organize everything and also be, like, on with what's going on politically.
Right.
So what excites me about Cornerstone is that there are a lot of people that are just feeling helpless and not sure what to do with the current climate. And I think a lot of times when people feel that way, they turn to religion or cults or help seminars. And so because we do the immersive site-specific thing, like we're going to be marketing it where, like, come to this seminar and help, and we'll help you, like, find your bearing again in life, and we'll, you know, and then it'll be a theatrical production. But it's gonna play on people feeling like that, and then give them a fun thing to go to and really make them think. And I think that's what art is for, is for people to come and have their feelings however they want to have them, like, no judgment with how people feel things, and being able to feel things is therapeutic. Also making art is therapeutic, so and everybody needs some therapy.
Mm-hmm. I have a follow-up to that. The concept that you are making something so far in advance is really important, and I think it also signifies that when we talk about this political climate, we're talking about something that became very transparent to us, but was also, has been troubling. I think we live in a world that maybe didn't want to see certain things. And so this makes me think Cornerstone was already something that we were planning to do before the election. I mean, we were planning it during the whole campaign process leading up to 2016. And so that can help us generate what we're going to be doing, but it doesn't change what we wanted to get out of it. This can speak to any time and any kind of fascist situation. It just so happens that we are living in one contemporaneously. Yeah. But it changed some of the tenor, but not the content of transformation. Transformation went up election week. Mm-hmm. So we already had that material all written. And I think it was just one of those things where we can say, if you need a place to be safe, if you need a place to have your gender identity and have a positive experience with that in a place, come to this show. So I think it changes how you talk about a show, but not necessarily the content of it. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like, yeah, the relevance of the types of shows that we're doing are going to maintain themselves. And it's how can we look at them and understand what conversations we're making happen with them, rather than let them exist on their own without being able to kind of correspond with what we see in our daily lives, mm-hmm. How we want to exist politically, I guess.
Yeah, no, I really love thinking about it that way, and it makes me think a lot about, you know, I've been thinking a lot about kind of progressives versus general liberalism, and I think it's interesting, this political climate that we're living in, because of the fact that I think for progressives especially, like, a lot of our worst fears were confirmed, there's a weird comfort in that in a way. And I mean, not entirely. Obviously, there are people that are coming out of all of it terribly. And I really am against the idea of artists being like, we're going to get such great art of this. Like, fuck you. People are going to lose families. Like,
that's like me saying, like, I keep saying when all the UFOs and aliens, like, actually reveal themselves, I'm going to be like, ha, told you so.
Yeah.
But then
also, we'll have overlords. Yeah.
Right. Well, depending.
I mean, maybe they'll be pacifist aliens.
I really need to come back on here and just talk about aliens.
Progressive aliens.
Right. Right.
Just, like, really humanitarian aliens.
Yeah, that's what I was
saying. I don't know. Humanitarian suggests that they're human.
Mm-hmm. Maybe that's how we'll get universal healthcare.
Alien.
Yes. Care.
Yeah, right.
Alien-tarian.
So then, like, Not One But Two, it was produced in 2016 in Hawaii. And it's about this family of peeps that are that have like meth in their generations and their family, and like how they. I am so bad at synopses. I should just never say synopsis.
I don't know if I can synopsize it well.
It's in the press release. Read it. But it's really. It's gonna be really cool because there's never been a show that's been in Pidgin English in Chicago.
We're working with the Aloha Center Chicago to help make it an event, a full event, but also be true to the original Hawaiian concept
culture.
Of it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Since we're not in Hawaii, like when it was originally produced.
Yeah. I love your cats, but I'm getting allergic to them.
No!
I have my own cats, but I'm like, I should take a Zyrtec whenever I come here. Mm-hmm.
No.
They're very active with their fur, I think, is the problem.
Well, then he was sitting on my lap
their
for like
fur
20
is
minutes.
Like,
so I love it.
Has its own living bodies. Mm-hmm. I wanted to go back to that, because we were coming to Not One Batu, which was great.
Yeah.
We're talking about the season, but also the concept of what it was stemming from.
I think I was just in like cat brain space and
just
trying to make sure we talk about all of that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I also want to talk about the new play festival too.
Okay.
Yeah, we
we'll
had.
There.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, let's talk about the new play festival.
New play festival.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Cool.
I'm such a jumper. I'm like, let's talk about this and this and this. I'm like a dog, but I'm not a dog person.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a cat person. So new play festival. it's July 8th. Save the date. At Mary's Attic, we're taking 3 plays that we've developed from our 24-hour play festivals, and then an extra play, just because, like, throwing an extra play there.
Nice.
Bonus play.
Why not?
And Mary's Attic, that's Hamburger Mary's.
Right.
On Balmoral and Clark. So people need
pretty
to correct
themselves.
Pretty
close to here,
yeah.
Andersonville. Yeah.
It's close to where we're sitting right now, but may or may not be close to wherever you're listening from.
Mm-hmm.
So you have till July 8th to plan. I wrote one of the pieces for a 24-hour fest, and it's a script that I've been developing. It's not going to be the full length. It's the short one-act scene, so they're all about 10 to 20-minute pieces that take place all in bars. So that's our site-specific twist.
Yeah, and how we do it differently, because they do have a stage in the space, but we don't actually use the stage for our shows. So we're going to place the 4 shows in different locations within the bar, and then the audience will like have to move to see the... Sorry, I'm sneezing now. to see the shows.
Do you want to... Where's the...
I mean, we have Benadryl if you want to ruin your day.
No. That was some really textural... sneezing and sloshing of juices.
Yeah
I just
I like
sniffed
that.
It back in there.
Yeah. But we do, we've worked in Hamburger Mary's or Mary's Attic before for a 24-hour fest, so 2 of the shows were originally made for that and have developed a little bit from that process. So that's part of what we're doing the new play series for, is to show how we work with new works, to develop it and to make it something that the writers want to continue with, or figure out like what stage is it at. So for me, I'm working at it towards making a full length. Some of the writers are working on just developing it as a very strong one act or short play. So it's really exciting to have something that is still produced work, is still showing what you can do as a writer and shows like what we do as a company, but is also kind of just a fun event based low-key thing.
Mm-hmm.
for our audience to come to that doesn't have like I guess the same pressures as a
full
regular
play.
Season
mm-hmm.
production. Yeah,
well, plus the because of it only being a one-time only thing, only the people that are there that night will see it, so it's kind of an exclusive
and
ephemeral
thing.
And it's interesting because the more you create those kinds of experiences, the more you end up kind of building a community out of it. I think that's something that we're talking about a lot. We talked about a lot yesterday's episode with Rebellious Magazine, because we were talking about this idea of working in something that is so traditional and something that is so like the idea of a magazine and just something that is so one conceived idea, and the thing that we really need right now in the world is more communal environments, and so finding ways to do that, and I think for theater and performing arts, it can be easier than we think it is, in that creating these just kind of like frequent, comfortable, continuous, like a continuity kind of, not continuity, but you know what I'm saying.
More art. Right. Lots of art.
Exactly.
Any work.
This goes, yeah, I was thinking of how do you think about building community and coalition building? I think that's more important to me, going back to your question about what should we do in terms of our politics? Should we go into politics? And to me, it's, you're operating within politics every day. So I think my choice would be, how do you develop ways to support each other and share resources and help each other out without having to necessarily go into systemic politics? And I think arts, especially arts organizations that work kind of independently or in do-it-yourself ways, though we do get grant funding, just to be transparent.
Yeah, yeah. But we also, we try to provide art for, like, the new play festival is going to be a larger ticket price just because we're trying to get to a financial goal in the next 2 years. But we do things monthly called happenings that are pay what you can performances. And our next one is this Friday. Edgar Sanchez is doing his solo show, which he's only done once before. And he's a equity actor around town. He's a company ensemble member with us, and he's great. I highly recommend being at the show. It's at 7:30 at Burger Park. Pay what you can. It's an hour. And then, I mean, he devised that piece from other pieces that he's worked on. So that's a great example of a devised work. So,
yeah, we always incorporate that back in. But then, yes, also working with artists in that way to be able to support them in some capacity is,
yeah,
here is your solo piece, or here's your particular group's work that you want to put on display. And I think that's, to me, that's the more important aspect of just,
yeah,
how do you give someone space? How do you give someone access to things?
Yeah, we want to provide artists a space to perform in, and then we do the pay what you can thing, and they get, the artist or group gets half of the proceeds of the pay what you can.
Cool.
So they can make some money too.
Right.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Well, the last thing that we do with all of our guests is a 1-minute plug for any upcoming events, or people doing rad work, just kind of a general shout out. So yeah, we have a few minutes left. Yeah, and I think sometimes it's really obvious, like if you have a season upcoming or
like a show on Friday or a show on July 8th or
I think we've plugged.
Yeah, no, I got one more. We got so much stuff. We're also starting yoga at Burger Park.
Cool.
Nice.
Saturdays at 10:30 a.m. We'll be outside if it's nice, inside if it's not, but it should be nice. And Burger Park is providing yoga mats, so you don't have to bring own mat. And they're all, we have like a rotating group of awesome yoga instructors that are doing a donation base, so the class is free, you can donate, and then they get the half the proceeds, and NWAC gets half the proceeds, and hopefully we all are happy from yoga head.
Mm-hmm.
Because and it's also, it's not a yoga class for like yoga ease, like I've been doing yoga for a really long time, but it's for like people that have never done it too, like if you're just interested in learning more about yoga or like getting into it a little bit. I recommend yoga for mental and physical health to everyone. It's just really, it's a great place to be.
What and time on Saturday?
Saturday is at 10:30 a.m. Mm-hmm. Starting May 20th.
Nice.
Yeah.
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 Is that this weekend?
Yeah, that's upcoming Saturday.
Yay, I get to do yoga on Saturday.
And to add to that plug, we're also going to be building more classes and workshops. So
yeah,
I'm teaching a class starting, I don't know,
in June.
Starting in June. There'll be more information from us in Burger Park. So again, going back to the Nothing Without a Company page. And Hannah E. Epstein is also teaching. We're both teaching writing classes.
Cool.
Cool.
Yeah, just general Facebook, Nothing Without a Company.
Instagram. We're on Twitter sometimes also.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Snapchat sometimes.
Cool. Wow. Very with the times.
I know. I kept telling our marketing coordinator, we need to get on Snapchat, just saying, and we did it, and then we keep forgetting to snap. But well, we do it occasionally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. I don't.
I'll tell cool. you about it when you're older.
Oh, thank you.
Well, thank you all so much for listening. I've been Daniel Johansson.
I continue to be Maureen Smith.
If you want to keep up with us, there are a lot of ways you can do that. You can head over to scottbmag.com. That's where we keep all of our articles. We have a list of podcast episodes there. Tons of other stuff. What we have going on right now is we are in the... We're probably going to be able to announce it in a week as far as like brass details. But we're producing... and a series of performances over the summer from June until August. And so we're set up into venues, the Red Line Tap, soon to be Buffalo Bar in Rogers Park, and Nightcap Coffee Bar down in Pilsen. And so what we're doing is we've been reaching out to different performers. We've been programming different performances to basically try and highlight different people doing rad art and doing rad work in Chicago. Some of them will be people that you may be familiar with from listening to the show. Other people are just good friends of ours. Other people we've never met. So it's super fun.
All levels of familiarity with the two of us.
Yep. Yep.
Very exciting.
Some of the highlights is one of the things we're really working for is diversity and representation and true organic representation, in that we're reaching out to a few different, we have a black singer who is going to be programming a recital performance concert of classical music by black composers throughout the eras. We're really excited about that. We just talked with them again last night. We are also producing a Latinx concert, very similar, with two Latina singers who will be helping us to flesh out a Latin composers concert. July 4th falls on a Tuesday, and so we'll be down at Nightcap Coffee Bar for July 4th. So we're planning a giant blowout, almost kind of like a block party event. We're looking for performers for that time. We have a 3-period time. We're looking for like half hour blocks of just kind of like, you know, hanging out. It's gonna be super fun. We're really looking forward to that. Besides that, I mean, it's, you know, it's 12:15 evening, so keep posted. We'll be posting a shit ton on Facebook. You will be getting harassed by us. Cool. And besides that, you can keep up with us on social media in a variety of different ways. You can head over to our Facebook page, Scott B Magazine. We are also on Instagram and Twitter at Scott B Mag in both cases.
And as always, I'm here to emphasize the importance of donations. As you just heard, we're looking to put on a whole shitload of stuff. And we can't do that without your help. So if you go to our website, scottbmag.com, go to our About section, we have a couple of different options for donations. You can become a monthly subscriber for as little as $5 a month, and there are some benefits in doing that. If we ever put on a show in our apartment, you are invited, and you'll also get a shout-out on the show. Oh, my God, I'm so sorry.
Okay, allergies.
Oh. If you do a one-time donation, we'll send you a handwritten thank you note in the mail if you give us your address. So, give a little, give a lot, and if you can't give, then listen, participate, and share.
Yep, thanks again so much for listening. Go out and make something.
Yep.